Good evening, and if you're just tuning in, you are listening live to the Angel Rock on UFO Paranormal Radio Network, or we like, as it can be called also, United Public Radio Network, or just UPRN, and I'm your host, Laura Lee Potvin. I am a Canadian psychic medium. I'm a spiritual teacher and mentor, Akashic Records practitioner. I'm a Crystal Reiki energy healer. I had to think about that for a minute. And energy healer, I'm an RN. I am also a budding animal communicator. I'm well-versed in near-death experiences, having studied them professionally and personally for over 40 years, and having had one as a toddler myself. And I'm extremely well-versed in the paranormal, as is my beautiful guest that I will get to very soon. She comes on the show very often, and I just love her, and I know you guys love her. But a few things, few housekeeping things first. If you want to watch a show on TV, we have a TV channel now. We are on Roku. The Angel Rock is streaming there tonight. And how you can find that is you're going to go to the channel store. You're going to type in UFO space P as in paranormal. There's a drop down list. We're about the third or fourth one down. You are going to click on that. And many of the shows are streaming on the channel. Also, this network's been around for 25 years. We have multiple shows that stream daily, 7 days a week. And when we're not streaming daily, we have the archive server that picks randomly amongst the past 25 plus years that this network's been around. So you get some great content from current, past hosts, and there's a plethora of topics. And it's the same thing with the different shows we have on the network. There is something for everybody here. So if you like what you see, please like, share, and subscribe. I also co-host with my very good friend, gifted medium and angel channel, David Hansel, The Thing at the Foot of the Bed on Thursdays at 7 p.m. So I hope you'll join us. And if you've been here before, welcome, or if you're new, welcome as well. But you know that my show here and on Thursday nights is very audience participative. So if you want to join in the conversation, 80% of our audience is audio only. How you can do that is you need to head over to UFO Paranormal and United Public Radio on Facebook or YouTube. We are streaming to my YouTube channel, The Angel Rock with Laura Lee Potvin. I'm not quite sure what's going on with our main YouTube channel. We have a secondary channel, so we are also streaming on YouTube there. Looks like you guys found your way. I don't know if you're on my channel or not, but if you want to join, it's called UFO Gods and Extraterrestrials. I am streaming on my Instagram account, but it does not integrate in the main chat here. It's The Angel Rock. So I will be checking back and forth. So please don't think we're ignoring you over on Instagram if that happens. And my guest is going to be interested in this because I told her the last time she was on about it, but I want to make sure I read this to you. And of course, I have the curse where I have to wear the cheetah reader glasses. So come hang out with us in Thunder Bay, where I live in Northwestern Ontario, Canada, this October 4th to 6th for the Lake Superior Paranormal Convention. Tickets are available now. VIP Plus and Supernatural and VIP Pass tickets are limited. There will be talks, workshops, paranormal investigation, and vendors. There will be guest speakers, and they'll include Shane Pittman, Jeff Belanger, our own Carrie Lynn Shellhorn. You know, we just love Carrie. Well, we love everybody here, but Carrie Lynn and I are friends. She is on Fridays here with Spirit Switchboard from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. She's an extremely gifted medium, psychic ability. She's also a paranormal investigator, and she's going to be giving messages from Spirit on the Sunday of that weekend on a special Spirits and Sweets event. So it's going to be a lot of fun. The travel channels Beyond the Haunted is going to be there, Dee McCauley, Dark History, the Winnipeg Paranormal Group, and so many more, including myself. I'm going to be speaking there. So I would love to see you guys. Apparently, I don't know all the details. This is being put on by Lucky Paranormal of Thunder Bay. I'll get more details, but as I understand, I'm going to have a table there. And you guys, I'm working on all kinds of spooky stuff to bring with me. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you want to buy tickets, you just got to look up, I think it's lakesuperiorparacon.com. I think I did everything. Is Carrie? Oh, somebody just said, yeah, Carrie Lynn. Everybody loves Carrie Lynn. Now let me get to my amazing guest here. I have all these notes here for myself. Varla Ventura, who has friend of mine, friend of this show. She's been on, oh God, I think since I had my show on the previous network. I usually have her on a couple times, well, I think about four times a year. So Varla is the author of Varla Ventura's Paranormal Parlor, Ghosts, Seances, and Tales of True Hauntings, and Fairies, Pookas, and Changelings, A Complete Guide to the Wild and Wicked Enchanted Realm, as well as several other books on topics like mermaids, vampires, werewolves, banshees, freaky trivia, and more. And she's got a new book she's just about done on that sounds so cool. I can't wait to read it. She's a lover of all things strange, hidden history, and wild things. We're going to be talking about all kinds of strange things tonight. Welcome, Varla. You're so patient.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. No, this is a welcome break for me. I have been hunched over my computer all week putting all the finishing touches on my manuscript, and it's been years in the making. So
I know you've talked about
kind of intense, yeah.
Yes, and you're almost done. You said you just before we went live, you said you discovered some strange and unusual things.
It's been amazing. I've learned so many things as I've been working on it, which I love. It's delightful. But I'm kind of just down on the home stretch. Technically, it was due 22 minutes ago, but they're not getting it until midnight. I've been working on it for years. I mean, as an idea, it's been percolating for years in terms of research and the topic. I've been kind of nose to the grindstone for the last 2 years. And then a publisher picked it up last summer.
Don't keep us in suspense. What's it? Oh, I know what it is.
So this book right now, it tentatively titled Enchanted Plants.
I love it.
And it is about, it's all about plant lore, really. And it's just sort of a collection of different plants and fairy tales and creatures that are associated with them. But it's the kind of book I love. I'll buy any book that has to do with that. So I've been working on it for years. Sort of the specific thing about it is trying to identify some old fairy tales and folk tales that include this plant. And that has been pretty challenging, actually, for some plants. So I had this list of, 100 plants I wanted to include. And I had to start narrowing it down for obvious reasons, but also because it wasn't just about finding the most interesting lore about any plant. It was about finding stories where the plant really plays a central role. So that's been really fascinating. And I've learned all kinds of strange tidbits along the way, which I love.
All I could think of was Jack and the Beanstalk. And that's terrible to say.
Actually, the funny thing is I almost didn't include that. And then, I ended up having there was a section on beans and, because of magic beans. And so I did, and there's all kinds of amazing, lore around beans. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like, I actually was a little bit of a late ad for me because I was kind of resistant to it. And then I just was like, what are you talking about? Like that's the example though, right? Mm-hmm. The story where a plant is really central to the whole point. Mm-hmm. I would say that without giving too much away, but the book's not going to be out till next spring. Probably available for pre-order in a few months though. So you can have me back on when we have that link.
Whenever you want.
But you know what was one of my biggest surprises, and I'll just tell you right now, is that I do have a section on pumpkin, of course, because we all love pumpkins. And naturally we associate Cinderella with pumpkin. Mm-hmm. But there's another version of Cinderella, and it's actually the Grimm's Brothers version of Cinderella.
It's gonna be grim and morbid.
it is quite actually. But in it there no pumpkin appears. In my estimation, the pumpkins are indigenous to the Americas. Yes. So they weren't really introduced back into Europe until probably the 1500s, like post-contact. And they weren't really like
a turnip or a beet or a potato.
No, it's a hazel tree.
Oh.
It's totally different than anything you think you know about Cinderella. and it's incredibly sad. The story goes that she's, you know, her mother dies, and every day she goes out and tends her mother's grave in the little garden in the back of the cottage. The father remarries a couple of wicked stepsisters, although they're not really, they don't do a lot in the book. They're not really, there's not a lot of conversations with them. It's just sort of like, they just sort of ignore her more than anything. But she is kind of like, you know, made to do all the work and covered in ashes and all of that. Other versions of it call it Aschenputtel is the other, is the, like, you know, the ash girl, basically.
Okay.
So the father says, I'm going to market. What would you like? And so the two kind of like greedy stepsisters say, oh, well, we would like gowns of silk and, you know, strands of pearls. And he says, and you, Cinderella, what would you like? And she says, oh, just bring me a branch of a tree that knocks, that tries to knock your hat off on your ride home. So he goes to market. He comes back with, you know, beautiful gowns. And personally, I think he could have just gotten something for her anyway. Yeah. But, you know, she doesn't ask for that. So it's a hazel tree that a little branch pops on his hat. And so he snaps it off. He gives it to her. She goes and she plants it on her mother's grave. It grows really quickly and it becomes this magic tree with a bird in it. And the bird is like the communicator. And the tree is basically, there's no fairy godmother either. The tree drops down the beautiful gown. Oh, and it's not one night, it's three nights. So there's three different gowns. Wow. It's like, it's very different. It was so, but the hazel tree is at the very center of that, where it grows up and it hides her and it gives her gifts. It scurries the gifts away so she doesn't get caught. It's totally on her side. The birds are on her side, which is, I think, where the evolved idea of, you know, the birds and the mice helping her make the gown in the Disney version. Yeah. I could see that. It's always interesting when you read the older versions of the stories, and then there's always more than one, and you kind of start putting them together and comparing
them. I had a Grimm's fairy tale as a little kid, and I could read really early. Like, I was reading textbooks at the age of six, like about dolphins, and I remember they wanted to skip me like three grades ahead, and my parents said absolutely not, and I'm glad they didn't. But I remember it was this big old thick book, and it had like Thumbelina. I don't remember that story about Cinderella, though. There's some
I didn't remember it either. But I have also a very old volume of, I mean, it's not that old. It was from when I was a kid, so it's fairly old. I have an old volume of.
I'm older than you.
It's like a fine wine. Mm-hmm. I have the collection of Anderson's fairy tales that, in my estimation, started it all for me as a child.
That, you know what? That's what it was. It wasn't Grimm's. You're right. Anderson's.
Anderson's fairy tales. But I also have an old volume of Grimm's. But Anderson's fairy tales is the original Little Mermaid, right? So that, but also The Girl Who Trod on the Loaf and The Marsh King's Daughter and all kinds of other creepy, crazy stories in there. So the tree grows, it drops down the gowns. She tries to kind of like hide away and not get caught. And, you know, the prince keeps coming after her. He figures out what house it's at because he follows her. So when he takes, and then he puts like pine pitch on the steps her shoe sticks on it, and that's how he gets her slipper. But he knows what house she's from, so he goes to the house. So he doesn't go to all the maidens in all the land. He goes straight to the house, and the two sisters are really happy because they think they have pretty feet. So the first one goes, and she sticks her foot in, and this is where it gets. This is where the Grimm
comes.
she sticks her foot in there and it almost fits, but one toe doesn't fit. And so her mother says, take this knife and chop your toe off.
Oh, good Lord.
So she does.
And they make that toe of that one step sister in the movie. I remember where she couldn't.
They make it pop out. Yeah. Yes, yeah. But they make their feet look big. So she chops her toe off, sticks it on. It fits now. The shoe is filling with blood. She comes downstairs, shows that it fits. They go away. They're going to go get married. And the bird in the hazel tree says this chant, which I've forgotten the chant, but it's this little rhyme that says she's not, you know, her, there's blood in the shoe. She is not the true bride for you. I'm not making this up. This is like from the story. So he looks and he looks down and somehow he didn't notice before that there's blood pooling in the shoe. So he turns around, he goes back to the house. She's not the true bride. So the other sister is like, this is my chance. So she comes out and says, she's going to try it on. So she puts it in the bloody shoe, right? In the bloody shoe. And it almost fits, except her heel doesn't quite fit. So the mother says, just chop your heel off. When you're a queen, you're not going to have to move it all anyway. Oh, so she does. So disgusting. She cuts her shoe. She cuts the back of her foot off. Fits it. Whoop, fits in the shoe. Blood's pulling in the shoe. He doesn't think to look. Apparently, this looks great. All right, away we go. Well, they pass under the hazel tree, and the bird chants again. You know, there's blood in the shoe. This is not the one for you, or whatever. We make a t-shirt of it. If there's blood in the shoe, it's not the one for you.
It's not the one for you.
Oh, right. And so much for the glass of gold. This is a shoe of gold. Right. So it's not see-through, like the glass slipper. That would really not work, right? So he looks down, blood's gushing everywhere. He takes her back and he says, is there really no one else here? Mm-hmm. And the father's like, no way it could have been Cinderella, right? He's thinking this. And he's like, well, there's just Cinderella. And he insists that she tries the shoe on and she tries the shoe on. It fits perfectly. Great. Not quite yet. Not quite happily ever after yet. Because the story doesn't end with happily ever after. It ends with them going into the church and the two sisters, who are apparently hobbling a little bit now, their sister's going to be queen. They want to be in on the party. So mm-hmm. they each escort her, one on either side, going into the church. And as they're going into the church, pigeons come down and peck an eye out of each of them. Left and the right. They go in. They go to the ceremony anyway. They turn around. They come back out. They escort her on either side, and the pigeons come and peck their other eyes out.
Oh,
and that's how the story ends.
Oh,
so that's where I've been the last, you know, 6 months or so.
Oh, wow.
Well, I've been in that bloody chair.
Sorry, what was that?
I said I've been in that bloody shoe the last,
I'm going to read some of our comments. Oh, my grim story, though. You know it's going to be morbid. So Diane Brighton says, hi, everyone. We got Cindy Simpson. She says, hello. I always like to say hi to everybody because, like I say, our audience is 80% audio. So
uh-huh, when we're going, yes.
we go, yeah, yeah, that's right. Or they're going, what's right? What you talking about? Z Sun Dragon saying hi to everybody. That's Kevin. Hang on. I'm going to go a little lower here. I just saw something on here. Hang on. What was that? I don't know what that. Oh, she was saying hi to Z Sun Dragon. There were some letters missing. So Kevin says, I watch on Rogers TV YouTube app on TV and open the chat on my phone. Well, that's cool. A lot of people do that. I don't know. It looks like Gur R. I don't think I've seen him here before. He was talking about our host, Carrie Lynn. We've got Nicole Thomas Ryan. Hello. We got Julie Evans. I think we just about hit everybody here. Hang on. You guys, I forgot to say this. Please, if you do like this, please like, share, and subscribe. Tell all your friends and family. Like I said, there's something for everybody here. So Diane Brighton says, first grim story. She says, so much for the glass slipper. And she goes, and they end up being blind. Oh my God. What a story.
It's so brutal. But the remarkable part about it for me is that the hazel tree is the center of it. And it's this, whoops, it's this kind of like just beautiful tree that has all of these magical qualities to it and is a harbinger of these birds that protect her. And so it's just, to me, that going about trying to find these stories, not because, of course, you know, with fairies, pookas, and changelings, that was organized by creature. Mm-hmm. And so you know, that's its own bounty. It's sort of endless with that. But in this, it was more of a narrow focus where I was trying to find glorious stories like that, and creatures and things like that that were associated with specific plants. So it's been a really, really interesting experience because some plants unveiled themselves. In fact, just one of the reasons I'm not done with the manuscript is that mm-hmm. just this week, two plants revealed themselves to me that I had otherwise had no intention of including. And now they're in the book. They booted out a couple of others that were kind of, you know, everybody writes about rosemary. I mean, I love rosemary. It's lovely. It's for remembrance. It's in Shakespeare, but it's got nothing on Rampion, you know?
Yeah. Rampion, it's called?
Rampion. So okay. Here is another one. Here's another story that, you know, everybody knows this story. And if you've read the original version, you also know this part of the story, but you've forgotten it perhaps.
Okay.
And that's the story of Rapunzel.
I was never really into that story, but I kind of know a little bit about it. Yeah. Okay.
So it turns out that in the Grimm Brothers, one of the editions of the Grimm Brothers stories, they actually took the name Rapunzel from a plant called Rapunzel.
Okay, I did.
The German word for that plant was Rapunzel, and that plant is Rampion. It's a campanula, so it's actually sort of vaguely related to some other campanulas that we might grow in our garden. They might be called like fairy bells or bluebells.
Oh, I love them. What about Lily of the Valley? Would that be included? I'm just wondering. I know it's a
similar looking flower, but Lily of the Valley is actually toxic. It's actually
I was going to say that. Yeah.
You have a chapter on toxic plants, of course. Because you can't, you know, you can't.
I have a big question of a plant, but I'm waiting till we finish this.
For the oh, yeah. So the point is, and I don't know if you haven't read the original story, you may not know this, or you may have forgotten it, because I don't think it appears in any, to be honest with you, I've never seen any of the animated versions of Rapunzel, but I think you know the Rapunzel, let down your hair and all of that. Yes. There's two things that are very different about the original story. And the main thing is that, again, this plant is at the very center of it. In fact, the plant causes all the trouble, because what happens is this lady and her husband, they really, really want to have a baby, but they've been waiting for years. They all start out like that. They've been longing for a child for all of these years. And she lives next door to this house that has a beautiful garden. Well, it's a witch, so of course the garden's beautiful. And one day she's staring out the window in the moonlight, and she looks down and she sees this rampion growing. And rampion used to be a very commonly cultivated green. It was used in salads. It's rich in vitamin C, and it gets this big fat root that's kind of like a parsnip. So it's you know, a delicious food that just sort of kind of lost in popularity to other mustard greens and kale and things like that.
Kale?
Yeah, like kale's so popular now.
I know.
What about rampion? Bring back the rampion. Yeah. So bring back the Rapunzel. So she's staring in the garden, and I remembered when I was rereading this story, I remembered it from when I was a child, this part of it, but I had forgotten for all of these years. And so she's staring out the window, and she looks down and she sees this rampion growing in the garden, and she is just overtaken with this craving. And so she says to her husband, "You got to give me some of that rampion. I've got to have some of that rampion. If I don't get any of that rampion, I'm going to die." Yeah. She's basically like, "I'm going to die if I don't have rampion." Mm-hmm. So he's like, "Whoa, okay." So, you know, nobody likes to go in there because it's a witch and there's a high gate for a reason. But he sneaks over and he gets a handful of rampion and he brings it back to her, and she gobbles it up, and she's just like, "Oh, that was, thank you. That was wonderful." And like a little bit goes by, and then she says, I have to have more like, I cannot live without rampion. So yeah, you and me, right? We're reading this going, well, she's pregnant. Like, of course she's pregnant. And that's, you know, so the second or third time he climbs over the wall, he's caught by the witch. And she says, why are you stealing my rampion? And he says, my wife basically said she was going to die if I didn't bring it back to her. And so the witch says, well, you can have as much rampion as you want, but you have to promise me one thing.
Oh, no.
I want your firstborn child.
Of course.
And he's thinking, we haven't had a baby. We probably aren't going to have a baby. I'm going to bring all this rampion. Sounds like a good bargain, right? Mm-hmm. So he
why not grow your own?
I don't know. I guess hers was more succulent, I guess. So he brings it back, and sure enough, in a little bit of time, they discover that she is pregnant, and a few months go by, and she has the baby, and they name the baby Rapunzel, which is after the rampion that she craved so much, and the witch takes her away and puts her in the tower and all of that. And then the other part of it that was a little bit different that doesn't have as much to do with plants is, you know, the Rapunzel, let down your hair. And in the Disney kind of the Disneyfication of it, we see this long braid that goes down like a rope. Mm-hmm. Letting down of the hair, she actually puts it up on a hook and drops it like a curtain. So her hair comes down like a drape. So she undoes it from the braid. And that's what the witch climbs up. So that was a little, just another little tidbit that I was like, oh, that's a different interpretation of let down your hair, right?
Yeah.
Because that's, if I told you to let down your hair, you would unpin it and you'd be like, yeah. But we think of her unfurling this braid, but that's just because maybe it was prettier to draw, you know, from the Disney animation studios. Mm-hmm. So yeah, fun little rabbit hole there, though. I was like,
there's one plant that always fascinates me. But before we get to it, I was going to mention quickly some of these things you're sharing. I found this channel on YouTube. And when I'm doing stuff with resin, or I'm painting, I've started sculpting a bit now with clay and doing whatever, I'm listening to something. And it's called Lighthouse Horror. And
I already like the name. I'll send you the channel. I'm gonna write it down right now.
Okay, it's so cool because the guy, he does voices with it. He's a really good narrator, but I think some of the stories come from creepypasta. But I gotta tell you, some of these stories, ooh, I'm wondering if they're based on some true facts. But it's not super scary, it's a bit suspenseful, but it's mostly tales of the strange
and lovely
firstborn child. Somebody, similar to this story,
promised. Always want the firstborn.
Always. And then they, what else? Like it sometimes got zombies. There was one story of newbie FBI agents just graduating. They went to go check out somebody was doing at this one place. They thought maybe there was some genetic cloning going on amongst animals and humans. They go to check it out. Ends up being almost, they never called it a zombie infestation, but it almost seemed like it. These are going on, some of them, for like 3 hours. And what he announced is, like, they'll tell a story and you almost want the story to continue because it's that good. He's going to start doing that now, working with authors so that they can create, like, the FBI story. I think there's 3 or 4 different stories. Like, they could be 6 months apart, but the author continues to write. And he always gives the author credit at the end.
I love a good storytelling podcast like that. There's a couple that I listen to that I just, when you're doing something that's, I don't want to say mundane, but that doesn't require you to like type or, you know, you're like doing something tactile with your hands to like listen, or I walk a lot and I walk my dogs, and now I have 2 dogs and they kind of have to be walked separately because one's low energy and one's high energy.
Okay.
And they can't be. So otherwise you're kind of pulled in half when you're walking them. Mm-hmm. So again, double walks, or sometimes triple walks in a day. So I'm always looking for, you know, it's the same walk. I mean, I can pick a variety of different routes, but like, you know, it's basically the same walk. So it's nice to have something really suspenseful like that to listen
it's
to.
It's really good. Like, I like audio. I used to love to read, and I'm the kind that if I pick up a book and it's good, like you don't see me for 3 days or nights. Like, I barely take time to get a drink of water and go to the bathroom. Like, I'm that into it. So I just don't have that kind of time. So
yeah, I know it's hard to. Yeah. So it's nice to multitask, right?
I love audiobooks because you can listen and multitask. But the plan I'm dying to ask you about, I want to say hi to 2 people. Here we got. Hi to you both. I'm so happy I finally caught your show. This is Dawn Haddam And we've got Sandra Sharp here. So welcome. And I'm glad you're here, Dawn, that you were able to join us live. It's always lots of fun. Okay, this plant. Now, we'll see if you covered it or not. But we got a whole industry based on this plant, Hollywood. Did you get into it? Did you write about it? Did you?
What plant?
Well, not so much a plant, but more like a tree, Hollywood. The Hollywood tree.
No, I did not.
I'm shocked. Okay.
What's the botanical name for it, I wonder?
Let's look it up.
Let's look it up. I wonder what it's related to.
Is involved with magic, and there's some dark stuff around it. That's why apparently that name was chosen.
Oh, are we talking about a juniper? Because I do have a whole section on juniper.
Hang up Hollywood.
No, because there's a Hollywood juniper. I don't think that's what you mean. The Hollywood tree.
You know how I know about it too? I am a supernatural junkie. It is called Heteromeles arbutifolia. How did Hollywood get its name? Is a member of the Rose family and is known as
Toyon.
Yes.
I know Christmas that plant here. From Native California medicine, but I don't have that plant in the book. But here's the great thing I discovered in writing this.
You can write a second book.
I could do a second book. I have probably about 100 plants that are not in the book that I have some interesting notes about.
Okay.
But just on the topic of storytelling and podcasts, that's what I'm going to do with them. I'm all of the things that didn't make the final cut for the book are going to become stories that I will put in Midnight Stories, the podcast that I started like a fool in the middle of writing this book. So now that the book is just about done, I can get back to the Midnight Stories, and those will be. They're about, interesting people of the paranormal, but I found all of these amazing fairy tales and amazing plant tales that for whatever reason, it just wasn't quite enough to make it into a whole chapter I had a word count because the book is going to have a specific design. And so, nobody wants I want a plant book of 100,000 words.
I would read it.
The publisher is like, no, I don't think so. But that actually just on kind of melding what you said about the storytelling that basically what happened is about a month ago, I realized how over word count I was and that I really needed to focus and think about what was really, again, that core message of the book, which is that the plants are at the center of the story, not just stories about the plant, if you know what I mean.
I get you. No, the only reason I asked you, and it hit me about Hollywood, and again, I didn't know this stuff years ago. I'm a major fan of the show Supernatural. I always have been. Is that it there?
No, this is a book. This is actually this amazing book. It's called The Ethnobotany of the California Indians. And I believe Toyon is in here. So I'm just going to look this up while you're.
Now you're thinking, right? So what got me thinking about it? They do actually quite a few episodes with different plants and the magic and how they know if something is possessed by a spirit. Like a vengeful spirit usually, because they'll say, oh, look at so-and-so is growing here and nothing else is, or nothing else is growing. And then they'll know that it's possessed or there's something dark that's there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was with Hollywood. I might've been something with Hollywood in there. And then where I really got into it was Joe Montaldo, who owns a network. He always calls me conspiracy princess because he says that is more conspiratorial than me, and he calls her conspiracy queen, and I always counter back, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm a truth seeker. And when you look into it, like nobody thinks, right? We all know Hollywood, and then when you start looking into the principles behind what it means, why the name was chosen, and certain dark magic. I don't do dark magic for anybody listening. I don't do any magic, but
there's a lot. You are magic. You embody magic.
I'm a witch too. When you come on,
oh come on, you're so a witch.
So Dawn says, I'm so into growing all my herbal medicinal garden at the moment. I discovered marshmallow is the plant. Yes, it is. Marshmallow.
Yes. Yes. And actually the root of marshmallow when it's powdered is very fluffy and it has a gelatinous quality to it that you can kind of make a fluffy kind of pudding out of. And it's good for coughs and stuff. Yeah. Oh,
I love plant medicine though. And
yeah, me too.
I know you do. My family doesn't have a family doctor. I actually had to apply. There's a new one taking finally. I don't know if they're going to accept this or not. But what I do, and I always tell people, I don't think I'm a doctor, but with my medical knowledge, and I always choose something natural first. I'm not giving medical advice. You guys, you got to follow your own advice and your doctors and what, but for my family, say there's somebody's got an infection or a wound or something, I will look up the plant alternative and what I can use to heal it and work. It seems to be working over all these years, but that's what I prefer.
Yeah. Oh, it's very boundless. And, I think there's just always something new to learn, and there's also new discoveries and new species being discovered. And it's really, So the most heartbreaking part about this whole process is not including every single thing that I want to include in it. And then something will happen like that. Well, what about this plant? And so that's why I love the idea of just like basically what I've got is as many files of the plants I have this thing called outtakes. Okay. And outtakes are the things that I've taken out of the manuscript mm-hmm. because basically, as I said, like about, you know, a couple months back, as I was approaching my deadline, I thought, so I was writing it plant by plant or mm-hmm. so I started assembling it all into the chapters and such. And within three chapters, I was already 20,000 words over word count. I was not even half done mm-hmm. With everything that I thought I was going to put in there. So about a couple months ago, I just kept going, right? And then so about 2 months ago, I put it all, I did a total word count. And that's when I started cutting things to get it down
But I like what you're going to do with it though, like you said, for your podcast.
Yeah So it'll be stories. I'll retell some of those fairy tales. I'll retell some of like whatever, so that, you know, it'll just be very I'll see what pops up. But right now I've got, you know, 100 episodes worth that I've already done the research on, and I've already identified their common name and their, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, but I'm a big plant nerd. So anything that has, like, I'll buy all the plant books, plant folklore books, plant magic books, gardening books, like I'll take them all. And, I won't show you because I know most people are listening and it's embarrassing anyway, but if I were to tilt my camera down, you would see the insane amount of books that are littering my floor right now in stacks, according to where, you know, what part of the world they're talking about. Are they science books? Are they magic books? Are they ethnobotanical books? Are they about native indigenous wisdom? Are they about Finnish magic? I mean, it's an absolute mess, and I won't show you.
Because we're losing a lot. Hi, Herbert Lopez. We are, Dawn Hatam said, go to my, I don't know, she's talking about neem cream. Oh, neem cream and silver spray. I know what you're talking about. Yes, healing stuff like, I've heard of neem cream before. Have you heard of that before, that one?
Is it made from neem oil? From the
actually N-E-E-M, and I think uh-huh. it's been over in Egypt or somewhere in that area.
I think it's actually also very common in Ayurvedic medicine, neem oil. Yes. And mm-hmm. I became familiar with neem oil because it actually, you can use it as a natural treatment for kind of like those infestations that happen in your garden that yes. soap and stuff doesn't take care of. Like if you've got a really bad scale or other insect infestation, especially on like a tree, you can spray it with neem oil and it mm-hmm. doesn't kill the bees, basically. So, mm-hmm. And but then it has tons of antifungal and antibacterial yes. properties. So it makes yes. sense as a cream. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the silver spray?
I think she's talking about silver. It's not silver nitrate. Oh, my brain's gone dry. It can heal pretty well anything. Silver, you can make it yourself. It's silver. You know what, Dawn, can you write the name in there? Because I forget the name. I'd have to grab it from my bathroom. Yeah. I have it.
Sounds like alchemy to me.
It's just, now it's going to drive me crazy. Silver, I've known about it for a long time. Like I said, I do a lot of natural, more type healing stuff. Colloidal silver.
Oh, colloidal silver. Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, look at that. Everybody's into it. Lovely. Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Actually, Sandra Sharp said it first. Everybody's saying it all at once. Alchemy.
Yes. We've all got it. Awesome.
You know what I was going to tell you, and it made me think of you, because I remember with your fairies, pukas, and changelings, puckwudgies came up.
Yeah.
I am telling you, I have seen so much either in the paranormal world with puckwudgies, bigger channels going on investigations. I'm getting goosebumps as I'm talking about it. Puckwudgies. And the other thing is shapeshifters, like skinwalkers. Everybody's in. So I got to ask you, what's going on in the weird, crazy world? Have you seen anything weird, crazy, unusual?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I actually found a couple of really old, like by old, I mean turn of the 20th century, 1900s, collections of folklore. And in one of them, they were talking about puckwudgies, which I thought was a little unusual, because I have heard about them in more modern terms. I shouldn't say modern. I mean, they're indigenous, right?
So you tell people in your definition what a puckwudgie would be.
It's a little person. Mm-hmm. It's a little fairy person, sort of a goblin. And my understanding is that they can be very, like all fairies, they can be very helpful, and they can protect you, but they also can be very mischievous, and they don't like people who mistreat the forest, especially. So
don't whistle in the woods, because we have, just in your area too, I know we've got a big First Nations population, and depending on who you talk to, and they have been caught on, every time I tell you this, you go, I've never seen that. They have been caught on camera. A couple of First Nations people, they've made it to Nuke's Top 5 and stuff. They've caught them from far away very quickly. Little people.
Yeah, we're in the same territory, technically, right? Mm-hmm. Anishinaabe.
Yeah, Anishinaabe, Anishinaabe, yep.
Yeah.
I'm hoping you're going to come up for the paranormal.
I wrote it down. It's the Lake Superior.
I'll send you this stuff conference after. Yeah. Because I know I told you about it. You go, oh my gosh, sign me up.
Yes.
For
that. So, yes. And I don't know if I told you this, but I was almost in your neck of the woods for a hockey tournament in February, but there was very little time and rink to rink, but we were in International Falls.
Okay. Well, yeah. International
Falls. Which is probably 2 hours from you, or an hour and a half from you?
No, it's a little further.
Yeah. It was amazing because we had all these teams that had come from little towns in Canada, and they had to drive as far as we did because there were no direct roads, but it made me think, oh, I want to do the circle tour, go all the way around Lake Superior.
And oh my God, that's a ton of driving.
But October 4th through the 6th. So I'm excited about that.
And I'm not like a feature way up on the main stage. I'll be doing the second room. I got asked to speak.
Well, how do you become a feature? Mm-hmm. Who do I talk to about getting on that roster?
Well, they put the stuff out there, but I can connect. They're coming.
Oh, I can look it up and see if they're taking any new speakers.
Well, I'll connect you with it's Mel Willis is my contact with Lucky Paranormal, but they're coming on in April to talk about it. Fun.
Okay, awesome.
I told you about it before it was announced. So I know I told you off air.
Yeah, secretly off air. Yes, yes. I didn't spill the beans. I kept it.
I know you're so secret. So you were saying weird stuff though with these 19th century.
Just that there was a whole description of the
puckwudgies.
Yeah, puckwudgies. And the descriptions that I've heard and the experiences that people have talked about involving them are very similar to 16th and 17th century stories that you hear in Ireland in particular, about these little people, and they're good, but they also have bad. They protect the forest. There's a whole host of things you shouldn't do and a lot of things you should do. And that they're, you know, like a very specific type of fairy. So to me, they seem very much like a fairy creature. Yeah, it's a leprechaun, if you will. Yeah, a leprechaun or a cluricon. Those are the little people that would be, you know, of course, like the image that we have today on St. Patrick's Day of the leprechaun. That kind of comes from what a typical Irish immigrant would dress like in New York in the mid 1800s. And that became sort of stylized. And of course, people love to make fun of immigrants. So the accent was added and the red beard was added and all of these things that were, you know, representative of a very small portion of the population. Mm-hmm. But the leprechauns themselves are 100% Irish and an absolute amazing trickster fairy. One of my favorites, actually, in not always wearing green. In fact, frequently seen wearing red velvet. They love fabric, and they're the cobblers of the fairy kingdom. And so you have the word leprechaun and cluricon. You also have cobbler and coblin, and then you have goblin. And these are all derivations of words that were spoken in the original language, which would have been Irish, or in Wales, you have Welsh, which has some very distinct pronunciations. And, you know, they kind of became, they sort of amalgamized and became words like goblin, which then, you know, in some places, the word for goblin, it means a negative thing. Piskies in Cornwall, Dawn says. Absolutely.
Yes, because I live in the land of piskies.
Yes, yes, lovely. Oh, and I learned a thing. So where I grew up in California, so if you're from Cornwall, you'll know probably about these places in California where the Cornish miners immigrated, and they came to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and kind of your neck of the woods up there. Yeah. And then they also came to this area in California that was known for where the gold rush was happening.
Right.
And so the town I grew up in is known for its pasties, which I don't think there's too many places outside of the UP and Cornwall that people do a lot of like pasty cooking. And I mean, when I was a kid, there were 4 pasty shops in town.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so one time I was talking to someone who is actually from Cornwall, and they said, oh yeah, you always have to like save the best little bit at the end of the pasty. And you toss that, you leave that behind for the piskies. Or for the pixies. And I thought, oh, I wish someone had told me that all these years I've been, you know, gobbling up. That's the best part.
I wouldn't have known that. But
I wonder if Dawn has ever heard that, if she's ever heard that.
She'll probably put it in the comments. See, now the things I've heard, and you know, the Dell, actually, he was out yesterday. He goes, that's my partner for people that know. He used to have a show on the network. And I think he went to the beer store and he comes home. He goes, you're not going to believe this. He goes, I'm standing in line and these two women came up and they go, they heard me speak. I guess he said he wanted it, whatever the name of his beer was. And they go, are you the Dell?
He got recognized.
And he goes, yeah, but I think it must have been his voice. And he goes, yeah. And they go, oh my God, I loved your show. And so I said, he has no clue who they are.
Oh, how wonderful.
I will tell you a stranger story. And you're, well, not quite your neck of the woods, but around. So we used to go to Rockfest in Kidott, Wisconsin. Okay. I know it's not right by you, but we used to go. And there's like, I think the night, was it Motley Crue or somebody was playing? There was over 60,000 people there, okay? And we were staying. We used to go for the whole 5 days. I remember one day we're going for breakfast because all our food was included. We used to go for the VIP package. And there was a massive lineup. Some guy, Dell and I have never seen, came up to me and goes, that's the Dell. And he's like, oh, my God. I have no idea to this day who this guy was.
Wow. That's amazing.
I kept saying, how do you know him? Well, everybody knows the Dell. And like nobody knew who he was. Like, we still have no clue how we met him.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Okay, so Dawn answered you. She said, I was so meant to watch your show tonight. I make my own pasties. My family go back over 800 years recorded there. I've been told my granddad was the fairy king. Oh. I love it here. Wow. That's
I love that. Oh, well, there's a joke in the up in the UP that someone says, where do you get the best pasties? And they all say, my grandma's house or my mother's house.
Of course.
But where I grew up in which is this little town in California, it's called Nevada City, and next to it is Grass Valley. And in Grass Valley, every year they have a Cornish Christmas. So they're very tied to this very small enclave of Cornish immigrants who came for the mine and then stayed and sort of made businesses and stayed long after the fact. But Cornwall is one of the most magical places on earth. So Dawn, we want to come visit you.
I've never been there.
I want to go and see the mermaid chair. I wonder if Dawn
tell us about the mermaid chair. I don't think I've heard about that.
Okay, so Dawn can correct me if I get any of this wrong, because it's been a number of years since I wrote about it in the mermaid book, but the mermaid chair is actually a carved bench in a church. It's called the mermaid chair, and it depicts these, it has this scene with like these mermaids on the side of it. And it's in a church in Cornwall. And it goes back to the story of the mermaid. I believe it was called the Mermaid of Zenor. And basically it was believed that this man married a mermaid, and everybody just thought they kind of treated her like a witch. Like, she wouldn't go to church on Sunday, and she seemed a little bit of an outcast, but she also had a vast knowledge of plants and medicine and communed with animals. And so the story is that she actually was a mermaid and that she had agreed to marry him, and their children are magical descendants of this this marriage between this man and the mermaid. And then not necessarily with her, but it was actually very common that people say, well, why don't you see mermaids anymore? And a lot of the mermaids were hunted during the witch trials, just like the vampires and the werewolves. And, you know, everybody was blamed for anything that was not quite in keeping with the church's doctrine. And so anything supernatural, you can't suppress the supernatural. I think we've all experienced that, you know, people try and it doesn't work. You can't suppress the supernatural. But anyway, so that's the mermaid, the mermaid chair.
Well, Cornwall's
right rich after. With mermaids.
I wouldn't say so much a mermaid, but it's such a morbid name, like my name. It's spelt like the Lorelei's, but it's Laurel Lee.
Yeah.
But I think it comes from German mythology for people listening.
In the river, in the Seine River that flows through the heart of Paris that they're cleaning up for the Olympics so people can swim in again, they need to be very careful because therein dwells the Lorelei.
Well, so for people that so I'm Laura Lee, but the way it's spelled, right? And it's they were sirens for people. I know Varla knows this, but people listening, they used to sing the siren song to lure sailors to crash into the rocks and to their death.
Mm-hmm. Or even passerbys, people who were just walking along the river trying to have a nice time. They'd be swept in by this beautiful song, and then the next thing they know, they'd be drowning.
I can't sing a note. I would scare the hell out of them. But you know what? My brother has the most incredible singing voice. He's got quite a music career. He can play I always say he got the singing and the music. I got the creative creation side, but I can't sing. So you have nothing to fear, people, except if you want your ears to bleed. You'll never hear me sing. Or Paris. What about? I never knew until Ghost Adventures what's underneath.
Oh, the catacombs.
Have you been there?
Oh, yes. I've been there. Oh, yes. The catacombs. And when I was there, I think there's a little bit more of an organized museum now. But when I was there, you could still just kind of like pop into the catacombs through these like various underground passages.
Yeah.
But I went and I paid my, €1 ticket or whatever it was. Actually, it might have even been before the euro conversion. So that's how long ago it was. But I went to like the little sort of like official entrance because they had some information about it, mostly in French, but that was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I could still glean what had happened.
You just need technique.
So it's yeah, there we go. So it's underground, like these passageways, and they're all lined with bones and a lot of skulls. And these are people who were victims, especially of during the Black Plague. They were just out of space. Already the cemeteries were overflowing. I mean, Paris is one of the oldest cities in Europe. And it was just, you know, they kind of took up all the real estate. So there were a lot of people, especially a lot of poor people and just people dying so quickly. But the church didn't like the idea of just dumping them in a mass grave, which was what was happening in a lot of other places. So as the bones were sort of like cleaned and, you know, weren't down to the bones, I guess, they were placed in these underground passageways in patterns. And so there's a heart in the wall. Oh, I got a picture of me from like, I think 1998, and I'm standing in front of the skull heart on the wall, and it's got the date on it because remember when cameras did that, they would like put the little digital date on the corner.
Yes.
But you mentioned Jeff Bellinger, who's going to be at that conference.
You know him, don't you?
I do. And in the paranormal, Paranormal Parlor book, I asked him, I said, will you contribute a book to my, or a story to my book? And the story he told is a story of the first time he had been involved in ghost investigations for years. And then he visited the Paris catacombs and actually had his first ghost encounter down there. So I did not have a haunted encounter. I just was sort of stunned. And then the other place that I went to on the same trip, I guess it was like the skull and bones trip. I went to Kutnohora, which is a town and a church outside of, it's in the Czech, what was then known as the Czech Republic. Now it's just called Czech. And, there's a church and the church has a, chandelier that is said to hold every bone in the human body, plus some other like decorative things.
Wow.
So the one thing I don't know, and I've never really looked into the history too much, and probably, you know, I could just ask an archaeologist buddy of mine, but like how much time went by before they could use, this is a really gross and morbid question, but how much time went by before they could use the skulls in decoration? And did they, I mean, that plague went on a long time, right? So did they expedite the process somehow with
because they were
trying to like clean them because they were also trying to get rid of the plague, right?
I think they boiled them and maybe it was with a bit of lime or
boil your bones to make my ash. Bread.
Some kind of chemical ash. I'm hearing that literally from spirit that's what they, because nowadays you'd use bleach, right?
Like that makes sense. Interesting you're saying that, because another thing that I was reading about very recently was the use of ash in like traditional hominy or making corn products, which indigenous people have done for thousands of years, and the use of burning some kind of wood and then putting that wood ash in is a super important aspect with corn, because what it actually does is it softens it and makes it more palatable and easy to digest, but it also releases the nutrients.
Maybe that's why it softens it and loosens it.
Totally makes sense. And not only that, but the ash releases the niacin that's in it. And that's a really vital nutrient. And actually, this practice can be blamed for rampant accusations of vampirism throughout Italy and Europe during the early 1500s into the 1600s, which was during the witch craze. Because what was happening is, of course, like it, in particular, the Iroquois, they showed settlers how to grow corn, showed them how to prepare it. But like a lot of, you know, jerky white people, they ignored them. And they just did it their own way. And then they sent the corn back to the queen and they just planted it and did it their own way. Well, they forgot the key ingredient, which was ash, which actually puts in this like, it's like potassium nitrate, which breaks down something in the corn which releases the nutrients. So mm-hmm. it actually is responsible for this disease. And I think the disease was called pagella, which means niacin deficiency.
Oh.
And guess so people all over were eating it because, you know, it was like, it's a great crop, right? You can plant it. You can make right. a ton of things out of it. It's really inexpensive. It's really easy to grow. It loved the European climate.
Right.
But nobody was paying attention to this key ingredient when cooking it. And wow. so people were eating it. They were getting full, but they were getting paler and they were getting angry and they were getting sensitive to sunlight, which are all symptoms of niacin deficiency.
I never heard this before. That is so interesting. I
fell into the rabbit hole when I was, you know, corn is one of the plants in the book. So mm-hmm. that's how I kind of fell into that rabbit hole of, yeah. So that connection between, you know, people were very pale. They were angry. Sometimes they would get delirious or experience some form of dementia. And eventually it was diagnosed as, you know, being this deficiency, which easily could have been avoided had anyone bothered
to listen,
you know, to listen to the first people, you know, I mean, geez. So, but I thought that was very interesting. Yeah. That, you know, there's this.
That is, I just heard that literally from Spirit. That's why yeah. I said Ash, because I wasn't even asking. It was just loud. I know you guys can hear it, but I could hear it. And I was hearing voices, no, within the mind's eye, if you will, or my,
yes,
you
know, I heard, yes, I know that. I know that place. That's how I know what plants do.
I know you know that place, but if you don't go to that place that people look at you like, you're hearing voices. No, I'm not hearing voices.
Not exactly. It's not as audible as a conversation between you and me, right? It's yes. a little bit of a different, it's a different voice.
I'm going to say hi. Michelle's here over from Australia. She goes, what? Did you guys have a time change? So everybody's answered her. Debbie Schmoly's here from Florida. And she said, yes,
we did have a time change
in North America. I hate the time change, but we did have it. And then we got Kasun Lee. He's in Sri Lanka. So he says, hey. So I was going to ask you. So I fell into a bit of a rabbit hole. I never look for these things. They just kind of, and I don't believe in coincidences. And I know you don't either. But I forget what I was looking at. And I think I was doing some research for Thursday's show with the thing at the foot of the bed, right? Looking for spooky, creepy stuff. And this guy's channel comes up and he's a bit of a emo kind of punk rocker, I guess, or whatever. They decide, and he's got this fascination for some reason with serial killers. I have no fascination in any way. Even though I follow true crime, it disgusts me. But he ends up finding the modern day cannibal butcher over in France. And he actually goes over there with him and his friends. And his name is, that's why I was going to ask you, if you're speaking of creepy stuff, because they went to a graveyard in France. The graveyard, oh my God, you and I would be like having a field day.
I went to the graveyard where Jim Morrison.
That's scary. Where they went. Yeah, and he used to work there. His name's Nicolas Clou, Cloux. He used to work there. He showed them around some of the places he'd break into. Oh, this sounds so gross. I can't even believe I'm saying it. To have some of his feasts. And showed them Jim Morrison's grave. But it's such a beautiful. So you've been there. You'd have to
I've
show
been
me.
There. Yeah, the headstone, like Jim Morrison's headstone's really like. There's a lot of above ground crypt type things. It's and so beautiful. Everything's like, I'm not a very tall person. So everything was like up above my shoulders.
I didn't realize that because I'm like five. Well, I was 5'9" and a half, almost 5'10" till I hurt my back. So I'm depending on what day I'm about 5'8" and a half, 5'9".
Yeah. Yeah. I know that one too. Those discs, they just kind of start shrinking.
I forgot. Yes, you have a backy thing too going on. That sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's totally good now. Actually, I had a fusion 2 years ago, and it feels great.
Oh,
it's like I love it. Actually,
you know what it is? But something's going to go wrong, and maybe it's because we put it out there, and enough nurses say this. But if something's going to go wrong, it happens to a nurse. And I have had 10 or 11 surgeries over my lifetime. Every single one of them, something has gone wrong. So
Yeah, I've always had very, very good luck, but I've only had 2 surgeries in my life. So
okay.
Yeah.
So no, I'm in no hurry. I'm managing the way I am, but I would love to, I haven't given up on the fact that there's going to be something natural to heal it with and mm-hmm. fix it. Mm-hmm. I just haven't found it.
Right? Just haven't found it yet. You'll find it. Yeah. I know it's so difficult though, because I know you're a very positive person. I consider myself a very positive person, and it can be very debilitating just on you mentally when you just don't, you can't physically do the things that you want to do because, you know, you're uh-huh. in pain.
And, you know what I came to the realization? Okay, as everybody's getting older, I'll be 59 in August. And I think, because I sit outside every morning, rain or shine, winter, whatever, to get my vitamin D and meditation, what have you. And I was sitting out there and this thought came to me, you know, I'm starting to hear more and more people in my age group complaining about the aches and pains and slowing down and getting old. And I thought, I don't have those issues. Mm. I think it's because I've always had, like, I hurt my back when I was 16 the first time.
Yeah. So you're like, I'm good. I paid my dues. You know, it's so funny that you said that, but a friend of mine, I think I'm like 10 years younger than you. And she said, I just want you to know that they're in the, she works in like, mm-hmm. I guess like the geriatric ward. Mm-hmm. And she said, I just want you to know they're playing The Cure.
Are you serious?
Like, this is the demographic.
Well, I always joke with the tattoo craze. Like, I have tattoos. I have worked in nursing homes. I went for my 4-year degree for nursing. So the first year I finished nursing, they hired me all through school as a non-registered nursing assistant, is what my title was. Okay, so you were only lucky if you maybe see one tattoo. And it was usually an old guy that had worked on the ships and was a sailor in the military, right? But I said, can you imagine, like, 20, 30 years from now, all these, I'm sorry, not being disrespectful, because I'll be in that sage group, but old geezers sitting in their rocking chair going, play some Metallica.
it's happening.
They'll be drooping and sagging. Goes, what did that used to be? Watch, they're still traveling around. It'll be a big thing, you know. Maybe the Rolling Stones, maybe they're really vampires. Like, maybe they'll come to play. I don't know. But it's true. Like, you don't think of that, right?
No, nor should you. Who cares if you can't tell what your tattoos are when you're in the old folks' home, you know?
Or when you've looked after elderly people, right? And I again, maybe my mind just goes to weird spaces, but okay, so, you know, they wanted to listen to music from the 20s and 30s, some little bit into the 40s, right? And so we always see people as old people, you know, they're sick and they're nearing the end of their lives. But when you really dig into the era of the 20s and the 30s,
wild living. They just know how to keep quiet about it. Mm-hmm. They just kept it quiet. It's like the Prohibition era, right? It's like, no, it's a vault. You don't talk.
People did some wild things. And then you think back, because I know the amount of history you've done and stuff, and even the things that you've written about. And I've said this before to you on the show, but I truly believe there has to be some truth to these stories. Otherwise, they wouldn't have existed to this
day. Yeah, well, and you really see that with plants, because you can actually see the scientific evidence as modern medicine has analyzed and found the alkaloids and the flavonoids that are in all of these plants that are active constituents that actually become medicine or are synthesized as a version of medicine. But I got a fun one for you that this I learned about very recently. Okay. So it's new to me, but it's been around since World War II.
Okay.
And this, so during World War II, as we know, there, especially in the U.S. and in England in particular, there was a huge shortage of everything, right? Like, everything was in shortage. And so I might get this wrong because I had to look in the manuscript.
I doubt it.
but the British government formed something called the Vegetable Drug, it was either the Vegetable Drug Society or the Vegetable Drug Coalition. Oh, and wow. What it was is that they got Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and women's institutions, and they worked with doctors and botanists to grow, harvest, and like wild harvest digitalis.
And oh, I could see that. Yeah, why? I could see that. Yeah.
Which is also known as foxglove. Foxglove is a plant that digitalis actually has a. It's used today. There's a Johnson.
Yep. Johnson.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And that is used to treat heart arrhythmia and to treat heart attack. So they basically got, you know, the women and the children in on it. They gathered and they brought it to a process. They gathered all
they were wearing gloves.
I would assume so. I mean, I would hope so. They brought the digitalis, and it was so successful. They were able to process something like 350,000 doses of the dioxin that they made from it. Is it dioxin or
digoxin?
Yes. Which was remarkable, because basically there was a shortage of drugs and other ways to treat things. And so they harvested the plants that they knew had this medicine in it. And kind of like, you've heard of victory gardens, where everybody was planting gardens to grow their own vegetables to make sure that there was enough food to go around. Well, these were a form of victory gardens. But I love that it was called the Vegetable Drug Society, or the Vegetable Drug Coalition or something. The vegetable drug just sounds like marvelous. And it was a really successful program during the war, during World War II.
It sounds really cool. Okay, but another theory I have and again, I'd like to make it clear to people, I'm not telling people to do this. You got to do your own whatever. But my sister-in-law is a naturopathic doctor. But my point is, what did they do back in the day? Now, I know that they didn't have the prevalence of disease that we do nowadays, and that's a different show why we do.
But they had other diseases. They had tuberculosis and stuff was a big problem.
Rickets or scurvy and vitamins. I mean, there were so many different things that they had. Yes, but my point is, and I think that we have been provided on this planet with everything we need through nature, in the way especially mm-hmm. of plants. And the problem is, I think we're losing a lot of that knowledge, plus it's not very cost effective for
certain people. Ignore things, and not everybody has land to grow, or and that's a big part of it too, because it actually, what you're saying makes sense to me, because one of the mm-hmm. first herbalists that I worked with, like sort of, you know, trained with, mm-hmm. One of the very first things she ever taught me was, when you are standing in a forest and you see a poison, there is an antidote within Absolutely. A few feet of it. Mm-hmm. And also, when you're in a forest and there's, or, you know, out in nature and there's something that is blocking your path, like a stinging nettle, it's protecting something. So to pay attention to those kinds of things. But yeah, just like, I mean, it, every plant that is in this book, I talk about the magic and the medicine of that plant. And you'll find
dandelions, like dandelions. Oh, yeah,
I just was working on dandelions this morning. Kind
of. You
I need a good quote. Me. I need a good like little poem quote or something that has dandelions in it. But yeah, you know, it's interesting because dandelions, they're just so like, so disliked, right? Because they can't, they interrupt the perfect suburban lawn. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're native to Europe. So in North America, they are technically an invasive species, but they're not going anywhere, right? Like, this is not a battle we can win, people. The dandelion
get rid of them. They are so
They powerful. Attract bees. Mm-hmm. They have an antioxidant quality that actually can clean the liver. Interestingly, a huge quantity though, it can actually damage the liver if you take too much of it.
It's healing salves. You can make cleaning products. Yeah. You can eat the leaves for salads. I mean,
it's good for coughs and colds. It's good for allergies. Mm-hmm. You know, all it's absolutely like an abundance of things that the dandelion can do. And not to mention, you know, can grant wishes and attract fairies to your garden, right? So like win-win. But yeah,
I can't wait to start my fairy garden. I have huge plans for this year with the gnomes and the fairies. Mm-hmm.
The real, you don't have to send pictures.
Okay.
If you want to see pictures. The real difficulty, I think, with some of those plants that are kind of considered like common weeds or whatever is finding them untreated. So it's very difficult to go out and wild harvest. And wild harvesting, I think it has its own issues. I'm not a big proponent of wild harvesting just because I think people are jerks and they don't know how to do it right. And they think, oh, I'll just take this one. And we all know that adage that if everybody took one rock, then there would be no rocks left on the beach or whatever. So I just don't think people are responsible. I think if it's, First Nations, Indigenous, then that's who has the right to wild harvest. Otherwise, grow it in your own garden. But it's very difficult to find something like dandelion, which grows abundantly, but it's also heavily treated with chemicals, or it grows near the edges of fields that are heavily treated with chemicals. And so what I always say in that kind of situation is to, you can also use the plant and get the plant's medicine in a more symbolic way rather than ingesting it or applying it. So I think kind of to what you said, I think that, sometimes a plant will come into somebody's path. It'll pop up in their garden. It'll end up near their door. They'll fall in love with it in a nursery, whatever it is. And that plant may be telling you something. It may be telling you something about something spiritually or physically that's happening in your body. And so it's always good to look and say, hey, what magical properties does this have? What medicinal properties does this have? It doesn't mean go and chew on the root. It means, hey, that plant's trying to tell you something. You know, it's basically thrown itself in your path. Notice it and pay attention to what it has to say. Because if you keep, if there's all these dandelions, well, yeah, your lawn probably needs like some nitrogen because they're acting as a nitrogen fixer. But also it could be maybe you have eczema. Maybe you have, you need to detox your liver because they're very detoxifying. And dandelion greens are those kind of bitter greens that they put kale to shame, right? Bring back the dandelion and the rampion.
I'm still floored by it. But now that I think of it, I have heard of ramps. I think that's the short.
Yeah. Okay. So ramps are actually, I think ramps are something else. And I believe that they're a common name for something that's a little bit closer to garlic.
Okay, yes, because that's what I'm seeing is almost like a bulb thing. Yep. It must be spirit giving me this because I'm seeing a picture and I've
Yeah, with little white flowers probably, or maybe little pale yellow flowers. But yeah, garlic is of course in the book, and wild garlic in particular is such a wonderful plant. But as with any plant, I'm sure they're gonna make me put some, I didn't put a disclaimer, but in the manuscript, but I'm sure the publisher will want to put some kind of disclaimer in there.
Can I get your book in the UK? So
yes, I believe so. So the publisher of this book is called New Page. And as far as I know, I think all of my books are available in the UK. And as far as I know, they have a UK distributor. So I will, once I give them the manuscript, then we'll get more into sort of the marketing end of things and they'll give me more information about that.
And then you're going to come back on again anyway. So
yeah. Well, I mean, actually the timing, because we kind of do it seasonally, right? So the timing will be good because I may even have a pre-order link. It may be wonderful to get, get pre-orders.
Absolutely. So did you have plants, did you go by season too? Because are we going into, is it Ostera?
I did not go by season. I went, I think you'll like this. I went by sort of my own view of a fairy tale place. So I went by the Queen's Garden, the Poison Garden, or the Witch's Garden.
Okay.
Meadow, woods, and sort of sort of aquatic plants. So the seas, lakes, and sort of swamps and marshes. So the idea, and this is why I haven't turned it in yet, because I really want to make sure this thread is going throughout, but the idea is that you start within the castle walls and you're smelling the queen's cultivars, and then you venture into the poison garden and you have a little peep, and then you go around the bend and you see the cottage garden where everybody's working hard to harvest mm-hmm. the parsnips and all of the turnips and all of that. Mm-hmm. And now that you've sort of like left the castle grounds and you're in the village, now you're going to hop on a horse and you're going to head out to the meadow and you're going to do some wild harvesting. And then you're going to go galloping through the woods, talk to some trees, and then at last you will end at the sea. So that's kind of how there's sort of a story going within it. And that's why I haven't turned it in yet, because I feel like I want that story to really come through. So
I love it. Well, when you mentioned turnips, I did not know this because I don't really care for them, but Del loves turnips. So he's constantly gone on and on and on that where we live here in Canada, you cannot get real turnips. All you can get is rutabagas.
Did you know? Yes. Then you know that turnips are actually the source of great controversy. Oh. Because so there's a really fabulous podcast, and actually I think you would like it, and I think Del would really like it, because they do talk about foods sometimes.
Okay.
And it's called Stories of Scotland. There's one episode in particular. It's these two Scottish women that they're hilarious, they're friends, and they joke around a lot. But there's one that's it's a Burns Night special, and it's Neeps versus Tatties, and Neeps are Scottish turnips, which are actually what we in North America call rutabagas.
Oh.
And so the great controversy is now when I think of a turnip, it's white, it's got a little blush of purple on the top, and it's got a white flesh.
Yes.
Now you ask the gals in Scotland there, and they're going to tell you that that's basically something you feed to the pigs, that a real turnip yeah. is what we would call a rutabaga and has a beautiful flavor. So it's this hilarious, and honestly, I spent far too much time reading about turnips, but it really became this, it was just this very interesting. It's like, oh, this is called, there's so many different ways to look at it. And then to make matters even more confusing in terms of folklore,
okay,
there's something called a German turnip, which is actually what I know as kohlrabi. And all of these actually are related. They're in the brassica family. So they're related to like mustard and kale and things like that, which is why some people eat turnip greens. So I just went down this insane botanical rabbit hole about turnips, basically, which, Del will appreciate that.
Yes.
But yeah, there's this whole discussion over. So, in the end, I concluded that it doesn't, whatever, pick your root vegetable for the purpose of, what it symbolizes in the story. Mm-hmm. But given the origin of where the story came from, I think the story in particular that I included in there, mm-hmm. which include the story of Jack, the original jack-o'-lantern, Stingy Jack.
Okay.
That it's a turnip, meaning a rutabaga. Yeah,
they have a turnip though. They never used a pumpkin.
Yes, right? It's a turnip. No, they didn't use a pumpkin until pumpkins were brought over. I think I read that the first pumpkin in Ireland was grown in like 1506 or something like that. So, and Swede, and here you have somebody, Mish, saying Swede looks similar to a turnip but yellow. So Swede is the other word for what we in North America call a rutabaga, but in England and much of Europe is called a Swede.
She's in Australia.
Okay. Well, then she's probably going with what would have been common in Europe. So the Swede is what I would call a rutabaga. It's the yellow one, and it came from Sweden. The first seeds came from Sweden.
Oh, I didn't know that.
As a gift to someone in England. I can't remember the whole backstory mm-hmm. there. But yeah, turnip, Swede, neep. I mean, I discussed that in the book because who knew that there was so much controversy around what you call this vegetable.
I didn't even know this till I've been with Del, 15 years, but I've known him my whole life, but I've been with him for about 15 years, and he used to go on and on and on because mama didn't raise no fool here. He's got a chef's paper. So I'm just the sous chef.
You're going to have to grow your own turnip then. That's the only way to please him. And they're easy to grow. They're easy to grow.
I think we tried. Ours didn't come up, but he's always experimenting. See, what happened last year was he switched things around a bit because he grows, we're in a townhouse rather than our own house now for the last couple of years. So he planted a garden in the front, which gets the most sun, and some in the back. But he said to me last year, our garden's not growing the way it was the year before. I said, I know exactly why. And he said, why? I said, because we did not put crystals in it. And I swear to the heavens above, I have some of them up there. They've been gathering sun and weather, whatever. When we put it in there, the within a month, that garden had tripled in size.
I got two stories for you that are related to that.
Okay.
One story is actually a really amazing story. It involves my mother.
Ooh.
And I had to get verification from my siblings on this.
Okay.
But my mom went out one night mm-hmm. to her garden and she did a spell. She did a little full moon ritual.
Okay.
And she didn't tell me what it was. She didn't tell me what it was about. She didn't tell me who was involved. It was just her garden, the moon. That's the only who knows.
Mm-hmm. Need but to know basis.
She went out the next day and she called me and she said, something happened. Oh, what, mom? What happened? My garden... I swear to you, it grew overnight. And I thought, okay, mom. And so she explains to me, I went out, I did this ritual and everything's like the tomatoes have gotten fruit. Everything's a foot taller. And I was like, oh, that's very interesting. So I called my sister and I was like, hey, so mom's saying that her garden grew overnight. And she says, my sister's much more grounded, I would say, than my mom or I. And she said, I don't know what happened, but I was here 3 days ago and it's doubled in size. So don't know exactly what she did. And so then last year, so I always grow pumpkins. And one thing I've learned is that you really ought not to plant the same plant in the same place twice. One, because they can be susceptible to any kind of like disease or bug that's in the soil that it might be prone to, or virus, and two, because then that plant has sucked up its own particular nutrients.
That's right.
Even though you're replenishing it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's all these plants that, you know, sometimes, sure, that all sounds good, but we don't realize, oh well, that means you can't plant, you know, potatoes and tomatoes next to each other. And, you know, you get your mm-hmm. kohlrabis and your turnips and, you know, all these things that are related. So you're kind of figuring that all out. But anyway, so I always plant pumpkins. I grow as many pumpkins as possible. Some years I have amazing pumpkin crop. Some years not so great. Well, I couldn't get my pumpkin or my corn to come up. Now, last summer was very dry for us here. And I'm sure, I think it was for you as well. Like, very dry. We usually get a lot of summer rain. So I was watering, but the seeds just were not coming up. And I'm watering. I'm trying to be very diligent. And then I just go out there one night and I'm just desperate. I mean, I have such a short growing season. If my pumpkins don't sprout, very easily. Oh. Yeah. You got 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. If they don't sprout soon, they're not going to ripen in time. They're mm-hmm. going to be vulnerable to squash bugs. And I'm just like desperate because I live to grow these pumpkins. And so no one was around. I just started singing to them. I made up a pumpkin song. I made up a corn song. I am not kidding you. The next morning I went out and there were sprouts. So when in doubt, how good of a singing voice you have does not matter.
Could I kill them though with my voice?
I think if you implore them with sincerity, although fairies do prefer nice voices. I just actually read this really hilarious story about this guy. It involved foxglove. And he sang really beautifully. And so the fairies mm-hmm. wanted him to be with them. And then this other guy was sent to try and get the same result. And he had a terrible voice and interrupted the fairies. And so they basically cursed him. So they do appreciate a good voice.
Okay. Well, the thing is, right. Well, the fairies, if you make friends with them, right. Like, I have some interesting fairy stories that if I hadn't been there, wouldn't have believed it myself. You're right about the garden, right? like we only have so much time. And so I always invite the, and you know what the beauty in it is too, with incorporating the fairies, which I believe are earth angels, is the fact that where we live, it can be known as sort of a rougher area, but it's like that pretty well. If you're living around a port or a lake here in Northwestern Ontario, North America is what I meant to say, you're going to have a lot of crime, right? Because of the underground business that goes on, we'll say. But so what I did the first year I came here, I made a fairy garden in the front yard, and people were stopping in droves to talk and ask. So that is what I love about it, is people are so drawn in by it, but I almost feel like it's the magic of of the space itself.
People are, and also just you know, we're desperate for that kind of connection and that whimsical experience and that transportation.
I have Dell believing in fairies now. I never thought I would have had a conversation, and you know Dell, about fairies. He believes in
them. He's into them.
He thinks we have because he swears, because we did have some spirits in the house, by the way. Hi, Julie Jean Bassett. What had happened was it was a Thursday day show, right? So we have security cameras, and they can't be moved outside. They have to be moved with the app, because otherwise if people could reach them, right, they could just do whatever they wanted with them. And he said to me in the morning, it was a Thursday morning, he goes, what did you do to the security cameras? I said, nothing. That's your arena. Why? He goes, because I got 63 alarms during the middle of the night, and the camera was moved all the way around to one side. And I said, well, let's point on when it started and see what happened. The camera literally, I swear to God, 3:12 a.m. goes like this and turns and just sits there. Okay. So then I have a bath pillow in our shower caddy, and it was sitting at the top shelf, and I bought it for him when he had a cold. He never gets sick. It was years before, sitting there. He wanted to have a bath, right? He says he's sitting on the toilet, and all of a sudden the bath pillow comes flying out, whacks him in the leg. Then I do my show, and I'm telling everybody about this with David, my co-host, and somebody goes, oh my gosh, I heard a voice in the background. They caught an EVP, but the worst, okay, the worst. This is a couple months ago.
This is the home you're in now, right?
So I'm, we're outside having a fresh air break. It's about 20 after 12 at night, and it's cold. Like we've had mild winters. We all have, we know this, right? It's really cold, like probably about 20 below. And then Dell goes to go in. He can't get the door open. He gives it a shove. He goes, darn dog. I go, well, don't brief the door into the dog. I said, plus she would have moved. And he's jamming the door, trying to get it open, trying to get it open. And I said, stop, like, just stop. Open it a crack, see what's going on. He goes, it's the picture. I go, picture? His mom painted this beautiful, he put our artwork up all over the house. So at the bottom of our stairs, right by the front door, there's this giant picture of Lake Superior and the sleeping giant his mom made. That thing has never moved, never come off. While we were out, flew off the wall, I guess, and there's a railing. It lodged itself right between the railing and the door. Like,
oh,
we couldn't get in. He had to break the picture to get in.
Oh my God.
So I decided that's it. I just did my mojo on the house all over. And I have a really good friend that deals with this stuff all the time now. Like that I have, if I, you know, would you mind popping in just to take a peek? Apparently there was nothing, but she could pick it up. It was really evil. But I have had 4 independent people tell me that do this kind of stuff or are very intuitive, that it was really dark. 2 things, shadow person and something like demonic type energy, and it was sent to us.
Ooh. Well, whoever would want to do that?
I don't know.
You don't have any idea?
I do.
Yeah, you know. You know.
I do. Mm-hmm. But
it's so a care of things.
Well, yes, kind of thing. Honey, we are almost got about 5 minutes left. This goes by way too fast. I swear to God, I'm going to have to go in every week to talk about all these crazy things. So I do want to say, though, so we got, so Kassan's leaving us some plant comments. Some people here go near the plant. They want a boost in growing and curse it. And the plant exponentially. That is in Sri Lanka, though.
Okay. Oh, and then he says, apparently plants can't differentiate cursing from complimenting. Well, do you remember that in like, you know, in school, you would do those experiments. It was like play classical music for this plant and then play, you know, Metallica for this plant. And, you know, someone would always do that every year at the science fair. I was like, which plant grew more? And
well, they've done that with water. They've done that with a lot of water.
I think plants just want attention. I think that's what's happening, Kassan. Like plants just want attention. So they'll take anything.
What about the sunflower? So did you see that video clip of that lady that had this massive sunflower garden and she loved it? And she wondered in her mind, do plants sing? So somehow, and I don't think she was an audio engineer or anything, she rigged up, I think it was almost like a microphone, to the sunflowers, and she recorded it. And when she played it back, it sounds like the most incredible symphony. Have you seen that video?
I haven't, but I have heard of a few experiments like that with different plants in the garden and different plants in like a controlled area and being able to pick up on the language that they're creating. And then, you know, there's the amazing sort of underground network of mushrooms that are communicating with the plants and the roots, and which, by the way, that may be the next book may be about
mushrooms.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's a little side project, you know? Because I had a section on mushrooms, but it didn't quite fit. And then the problem with mushrooms is, I know we don't have any time, so I'll have to come back and we'll get into this. But
you are gonna come back. I'm gonna let you get away that quick.
Mushrooms are much more in terms of the folkloric record and old fairy tales. It's much more difficult to identify what type of mushroom they're talking about. Like, think Alice in Wonderland, right? They don't say that's a fly agaric or whatever. So you don't always know that in stories. So there's plenty of info about those specific mushrooms, but then there's plenty of stories that involve mushrooms, but not necessarily where I could arrange it the way I've arranged this book, which is, you know, by corn and bean and cabbage and you know, foxglove and all of that. So it's going to have a little bit of a different approach that, so that's why I actually ended up taking the mushrooms out to put them somewhere else.
I keep feeling like there's going to be a second book, but where can people buy your books?
They can buy my current books. Yeah.
Your podcast, the whole bit. And I will have her back on, you guys. You know I will.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So my website is varlaventura.net. My books are all available anywhere books are sold. You can get them on Amazon, Bookshop, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore. They're all in print. I have 6 books out that are in print. The 2 most recent ones are Fairies, Pookas, and Changelings, A Complete Guide to the Wild and Wicked Enchanted Realm. And then another one called Paranormal Parlor, which is Tales of True Hauntings. It's got a lot of my own experiences in there. Haunted places, all that kind of good stuff. And a lot of interesting stuff about women of the paranormal, which is another topic
you've told some incredible stories.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So then, and actually I found out about some incredible women writers who were collecting folklore who didn't get the credit. So they'll be in an episode of a podcast or an upcoming talk, at a paranormal conference coming near you.
Remind them the name and where they can listen to it.
Yeah, so that's called Midnight Stories. And right now there's just the one episode, and that's it's called Books Are Feeders for Brothels. And it's about the incorrigible Ida Craddock, who got all of her knowledge of the marriage bed from a angelic being that she was married to. And she was a sex educator from the mid-1800s. So she's quite a remarkable woman. Anyway, yeah, Midnight Stories. Varla Ventura, I'm around. Mostly communication is through Facebook or my website.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm so glad you came on. I was so looking forward
to it. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, because I have actually been in this tunnel, and it's been kind of a stressful tunnel. So I really appreciate getting to talk to you and kind of, you know, remind myself why I'm putting myself through this to get this book out. Well, people want to
buy, but before we let everybody go, if you guys enjoyed this, stay tuned for Philip and Julia Siracusa with the Horsefly Chronicles coming up next. I will next be on here on Thursday with David Hansel with The Thing at the Foot of the Bed, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You ever want to get a hold of me, you got a show idea, guest suggestions. I have some interesting guests coming up in the future. We always have interesting guests. You want to book a reading? I do teaching and mentoring. I also, what else do? Energy healing. So you can get a hold of me on facebook.com/theangelrock. I have two groups on Facebook, Paranormal University for all things paranormal and the Angel Rocker Tribe for more spiritual type things. Don't forget about our group that we started with The Thing at the Foot of the Bed on Facebook. When we get to 200 people, I think we're almost at 100. We just started it. David and I are going to start going live in there, not on show nights, other random times, giving free one question readings, answering questions and what have you. So again, thank you, Varla. Stay tuned for a sec after.
Just reading the comments. There's some wonderful comments in there.
I know. I have such a wonderful audience here, and I love every one of you. So next week, I'm trying to remember who I got booked. I got somebody great. You guys know I do. So we'll see you on the Angel Rock next Monday, same time, same space. And we'll see you on Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Okay, everybody, stay spooky and much love and light. Okay, we'll see you next Monday, I guess, and Thursday sooner.